The 8 o'clock hour is supported by Long Run Wealth Advisors Lake Placid, offering tailored wealth management and retirement solutions, securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services, longrunwealth.com. And by the Adirondack Foundation and the Adirondack Birth to Three Alliance, dedicated to providing all children the best possible start in life, AdirondackBT3.org.
This is North Country Public Radio. It's about 5 minutes past eight on this Tuesday, November 10th. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, we'll have an update on a couple of lingering elections. But first, we've got an update on the coronavirus.
A second wave of COVID-19 is hitting the North Country. Since Friday, health officials reported more than 100 new infections across the region. Clinton County reported 17 new cases yesterday. Jefferson, Lewis, and Franklin counties all saw new infections in the double digits.
And St. Lawrence County has issued a state of emergency after COVID-19 surged to 74 active cases over the weekend, with another 14 new cases reported on Monday. Our Julia Ritchie reports.
St. Lawrence County Board of Legislators Chairman Joseph Lightfoot says the state of emergency was declared at the request of the county's public health department. He says this will reduce the number of county employees in office buildings back to 50% and reinstitute telework.
Hopefully this will put a, as I said, a finer point on, you know, some of the things that need to be adhered to and things that need to be thought about before we, engage in any activity or conduct that might increase the chances that we get this virus.
He says the declaration will not impact businesses or schools, which are subject to state law. Across the North Country, the positivity rate has been steadily increasing, averaging 1.4% over the last week. Lightfoot says the emergency declaration is good for 30 days and can be renewed again if needed. Julia Ritchie, North Country Public Radio.
All schools in Franklin County are shifting entirely to remote learning until January due to a recent surge in coronavirus cases. The move was strongly recommended by public health officials on Monday. Schools in Chateauguay had already moved to remote learning this week due to a recent COVID-19 exposure. Today is the last day of in-person learning for students at Brushton Moira, St. Regis Falls, Salmon River, and Malone Central School Districts. Saranac Lake and Tupper Lake school districts, where infection rates are lower, will move to remote learning on Monday, November 16th. If the county is able to lower infection rates, students will be allowed to return to in-person learning on January 4th.
While there have been some large indoor gatherings linked to new clusters in the North Country, health officials say small gatherings are also to blame. Franklin County, which has seen 40 new cases in the last week, is urging residents to avoid getting together with anyone outside of their household and to stay home if they feel sick. Emily Russell spoke with Erin Strife, a nurse for the Franklin County Public Health Department, about why wearing a mask and staying home is the most effective way to slow the spread of COVID-19.
Franklin County is describing what's happening there as unprecedented community spread. Can you just kind of describe what's going on in Franklin County right now?
Yes, we're seeing more numbers of positives per day than we've ever seen in the past, and they're not linked to any one single cluster or outbreak. We have a number of different identified clusters, but we are also seeing cases in community members where we can't identify the source. So it's just being attributed to community spread as a general term.
Do you have any idea of where that's spreading? Is it like schools, businesses, small gatherings?
Small gatherings is the primary source of spread, and then that gets taken into schools and businesses and other locations. But it is people who, in my opinion, are maybe becoming somewhat complacent or experiencing COVID fatigue, as we've heard the term, who are gathering with people outside of their household and maybe doing things like eating and drinking and not wearing masks And another consideration that is out there is people having maybe very mild symptoms of runny nose or thinking that they're not very sick and going out and about and being in fact positive.
We're entering cold and flu season. Is there a way to tell the difference between those viruses and COVID-19? And what should people do if they, say, just have a runny nose or a sore throat?
Unfortunately, there's not a way to tell without a test. When this very first began last March, we were thinking that maybe the symptoms of COVID were the cough, shortness of breath, and fever. But now we're seeing symptoms include a headache, include the runny nose, just tiredness, sore throat. So unfortunately, if anyone has any of those symptoms, we strongly recommend that that person remain at home, not go out in public, and call their healthcare provider to arrange a test.
There's a county COVID hotline that you guys are staffing, I think, every day. What kinds of questions or concerns are you hearing about from people on that hotline?
A lot of the concerns that are coming in are people wondering if they've been exposed. And we can't release names of confirmed positives. What we can say is if you think you've been exposed, please self-quarantine. And if you have symptoms, get a test to confirm whether you have COVID. Now, I will caution that exposure to test time when that test might be positive is maybe 5 to 8 days. It's not an exact science. But if you think that you were exposed yesterday, getting a test today is probably not going to show anything unless you're actively symptomatic yourself.
The state has more strict regulation for COVID hotspots that we're seeing down closer to New York City, with schools having to go all remote, businesses being forced to close. That's obviously not where I think anyone wants to end up here in the North Country. So to avoid that kind of scenario, what is the tough love that you think people need to hear right now?
Continue to wear your mask. Continue to physically distance. I know that it's tiresome. I know that people want to spend time socializing. But it's really these small gatherings that then just blossom into larger outbreak situations. As we're coming into the holidays, I'm very concerned that we're going to continue to see cases rise because people are going to want to spend these holiday meals together. And I'm just very concerned that that's not going to go well for us.
Erin Strife is a nurse for Franklin County. She spoke with Emily Russell. Again, if you experience any symptoms associated with the cold, with cold or flu, the best thing to do is stay home and consult your doctor over the phone. You can get more news all the time at our website, ncpr.org.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour right here on North Country Public Radio. It's 12 minutes past 8. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. So at the beginning of the pandemic, you could hardly find flour or yeast in the baking aisle because folks were baking more bread. Today, we get ready for the holiday season and we listen back to one of our bread time stories from this time last year. That's just ahead on the 8 o'clock hour. Stick around.
This is music by Ben Sharon out of Watertown. The 8 o'clock hour is supported by Adirondack Land Trust, protecting wild shoreline on the Sable, Boquette, Bog, Oswegatchie, and Hudson Rivers. AdirondackLandTrust.org. And by CECOM, serving the financial needs of North Country residents with 6 branches, online and on your smartphone at CECOM.org, now open on Shelburne Road in South Burlington.
Democrat Chris Rosenquist will be the next mayor of Plattsburgh. Rosenquist pulled ahead of his opponent, Republican Scott Beebe, as Clinton County completed its count of mail-in ballots yesterday. He will replace sitting Democratic Mayor Colin Reed. Emma Jacobs has more.
Chris Rosenquist was trailing at the end of in-person voting, but absentee ballots overwhelmingly returned by Democratic voters pushed Rosenquist ahead as the county finished its count on Monday. Here's Rosenquist.
I think the process worked, the voting worked. We both of us worked very hard on our campaigns. And, at the end of the day, it's very satisfying to see those.
Rosenquist, a Clinton County legislator, defeated incumbent Mayor Colin Reed in the Democratic primary this spring. His opponent, retired police officer Scott Beebe, received praise from Clark Currier, who chairs the Clinton County Republican Committee.
Scott ran a very good race, and it's a heavily Democratic city, like most of the cities are. And for him to have a 290-vote lead on election night was really tremendous. It shows how hard he worked and how many people liked his message.
Rosenquist grew up in Plattsburgh and attended SUNY Plattsburgh. He lived in the Seattle area for several years before returning and making a first bid for mayor as an independent in 2013. He's named priorities that include improving relationships with regional partners like the town of Plattsburgh, creating new housing, and developing a revised plan for the city's downtown revitalization initiative, including the controversial Durkee Street project. Emma Jacobs, North Country Public Radio.
The race to represent New York's 22nd congressional district still hasn't been called. Republican Claudia Tenney challenged incumbent Democrat Anthony Brindisi for his seat in Congress. Tenney previously held the seat but lost to Brindisi in 2018 by about 4,400 votes, or less than 1%. According to Utica's Observer Dispatch, Tenney is now leading by more than 28,000 votes, though there are more than 50,000 absentee ballots still to be counted. The paper reports Brindisi faces a steep climb, needing nearly 80% of all those absentee ballots to be cast in his favor. Absentee ballots postmarked by Election Day must arrive by the end of today to count.
On a lighter note, there are new inductees into the National Toy Hall of Fame here in upstate New York, including Baby Nancy. That's the first black baby doll to have an afro and other authentic features. The 2020 honorees were recognized for their creativity and popularity over time. The Baby Nancy doll was the first doll put out by a California company that was launched in 1968 by the black community organization Operation Bootstrap following the Watts riots in Los Angeles. Nick Ricketts is a curator at the Strong Museum in Rochester, and he says Baby Nancy was an important first milestone.
They decided that they would make African-American appropriate playthings, and Baby Nancy was one of the first ones. And yes, she was the first doll that wasn't just a Caucasian doll in a different color. She actually had African-American features.
The other inductees to the Toy Hall of Fame this year include the woodblock game Jenga and sidewalk chalk. Remember sidewalk chalk? Ricketts says sidewalk chalk was inducted partly due to its longevity. There's evidence that prehistoric cave art was done in chalk. And during this time when so much of the world is shut down, Ricketts says there's been an increase in sidewalk art.
It's also so big right now because it was a way for children and adults to express themselves during the pandemic. Just, doing a nice drawing out in front of their house. Saying, keep the faith or stay strong or thank you, Dr. So-and-so, whatever.
The inductees came out of recommendations from the public that were then reviewed by a panel of experts. It's 8:19. You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, we'll be getting ready for the holidays with some bread baking. After that, stick around for Bird Note. The lesser prairie chickens in Kansas are losing their native habitat. We'll hear more on that on Bird Note coming up at 8:30. But first, a peek at the weather. It's 55 degrees in Chateauguay and Pulaski, 48 degrees in Saranac, and 45 degrees in Lake George. We can expect a gorgeous day today. Sunny skies, highs in the 70s, expecting to become partly cloudy in the St. Lawrence Valley. A rainy day tomorrow with highs in the 60s, and after that, things cool off a little bit. Well, so last year, we kicked off an occasional series called Breadtime Stories. We heard from listeners across our region with stories and memories of spending time in the kitchen or a campsite baking bread. And remember last spring at the start of the pandemic when many stores sold out of flour? It seemed like everyone was going to bake their own bread, and some did. So we'd like to listen back to our series and invite you to share new bread baking stories.
Yeah, we'll start out with a tale from William Mattson, who grew up in Norwood in St. Lawrence County. He shares the story of three generations of bread bakers. His grandmother and mother were well known in the community for baking bread for family and neighbors during hard times. Mattson's grandmother, Alta Morgan, lived between Norwood and Norfolk in a farmhouse built by her husband, Edson Morgan. There, they raised nine children. And during the Great Depression, Alta's freshly baked bread provided food and income for the family. William's mother, Ethel Morgan Mattson, remembers her mother rising at 3 a.m. each day to start the wood-fired stove to bake bread, donuts, and cookies for some of the local stores. He says it's no surprise that his mother learned to love baking bread, and so did he.
My name is William Mattson. I grew up in the North Country, but have lived for the last 40-plus years in Washington, D.C. My sisters and I grew up with bread baked fresh every week. Looking back, I'm amazed at how we simply took it for granted. When my parents became empty nesters, they moved from their Prospect Street home in Norwood to their cottage on Norwood Lake. There, in her small galley kitchen, my mother continued to bake an abundance of bread, not just for herself, but for others. She had multiple standing orders for weekly whole wheat and white bread. Folks knew which day they were to stop by the Lake Norwood cottage of Bill and Ethel Mattson to pick up their bread. My mother would use some of her bread money to buy supplies for the Raggedy Ann and Andy dolls she was well known for crafting. And while none of us know precisely how much bread was simply given away, both my parents were quite generous in sharing what little they had. My mother knew she was dying. A few weeks before her death, she was able to form one simple question that she posed to my sister Mary Lou. "Who will bake the bread?" she asked. No conversation followed. The question simply lingered. That question became part of her legacy. The answer, of course, is we will bake the bread. To that end, my four sisters and I all became bread bakers. After losing both our parents, we even fashioned a family cookbook with that title, Who Will Bake the Bread? The first recipe in the book: white homemade bread for everybody. The same recipe our mother used, the same recipe her mother used. And so, down here in Washington, D.C., I bake bread. Following the lead of my mother, with every batch of bread I bake, at least one loaf is given away to a friend or neighbor. And for the last few years, I've baked the bread for our communion services at Mount Vernon Place United Methodist Church, just blocks away from our nation's capital. I confess to adding some of my own little twists to the basic recipe. My favorite? Tossing into the dough a handful of freshly chopped rosemary. The aroma and taste is exquisite. So, who will bake the bread? Thank you, Mom. Challenge accepted.
You'll find photos of William Mattson's mother kneading bread and his braided rosemary bread at ncpr.org. And we want to hear your bread time stories. And if you're spending more time at home during the pandemic, has it become part of your new normal? We want to know. Email your bread time story to radio@ncpr.org.
Look up, child. World is born. Shoes untied and your soles are worn. Windows are rolled down. Sunny is setting high. Windows are rolled.
This is the song Windows Are Rolled Down by Amos Lee. If you're enjoying this, tune in this afternoon for Trail Mix with Sarah Sclafidi McGuire. She chooses good vibe music for Tuesday afternoons with new folk, old folk, and Americana music. I know I love tuning in every Tuesday afternoon. And she says that she's looking forward to playing Amos Lee this afternoon on what just may be this last gorgeously warm day before winter starts. How about it, Todd?
I am staring out the window right now at blue sky and some sunshine here in Canton. And yeah, it's going to be a nice day. In fact, I wonder if there aren't some folks with their car windows rolled down right now. What, 62 degrees in Canton?
It's just going to be.
But this afternoon, the drive home probably, right, during Sarah's show? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, such gorgeous weather. Highs in the 70s today, sunny skies. Got to enjoy it.
I'm going to be out raking. That'll be me in the front yard raking leaves. Yeah, I'm a procrastinator, so this is my chance to get the leaves, you know, taken care of. Right, okay. So we're off to Bird Note in just a moment, and then we'll check a couple of community calendar items and more of Morning Edition coming up in just a moment. Thanks so much for listening. This hour's programming supported by Guideboat Realty, located in Saranac Lake, where health, history, and the arts meet in the Adirondacks. Your guide to Adirondack real estate, guideboatrealty.com. And by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake, 800-941-5001. As Monica mentioned, we've got mostly sunny skies. The weather service is partly cloudy in the St. Lawrence Valley, but I don't know. Right now I see some sunshine here in Canton. So partly to mostly sunny, highs today near 70, winds out of the south.
Come early spring across the southern Great Plains, you can find male lesser prairie chickens putting on quite a show. Here in southwest Kansas at a lek or mating area, the males are defending their territory. They raise their long neck feathers, fan their tails, stomp their feet, and inflate their orange throat sacs to yodel. All this to attract brown and white striped females. The lesser prairie chicken was once abundant across the plains, but they've lost 85% of their historic range due to agriculture, overgrazing, invasive trees, and land development. Regulations been tough. Most of the bird's habitat sits on privately owned land, like Mike McCarty's Kansas Ranch, about 50 miles from that lek.
Yes, we need to protect our wildlife and everything, but we also need to protect our people, our agriculture.
Attitudes like these got the U.S. Department of Agriculture to launch its Lesser Prairie Chicken Initiative in 2010 to provide subsidies to landowners like McCarty to improve habitat for the birds by doing prescribed burns and uprooting invasive trees, for example. McCarty was skeptical at first, but after a massive wildfire killed half of his cattle and burned 90% of his crops, he decided to join the program. He says getting that subsidy has kept his ranch afloat and helped the Lesser Prairie Chicken, too.
We have seen probably 15 or 20 prairie chickens at a time, which is a lot more than what we've seen for a long time. They are coming back.
Over the last decade, the bird's population's improved a bit, but its conservation status remains in limbo. Next spring, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will determine whether to list the bird as endangered. For Bird Note, I'm Suzanne Hogan.
It's 8:32. You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio, supported by the Adirondack Council, dedicated to preserving the Adirondack's legacy for future generations. Learn more at AdirondackCouncil.org. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandrescu. We still got a lot of things going on in our community this week. Don't forget to tune in this evening for a virtual unveiling of the St. Lawrence County's Arts Fiber Arts Exhibit. That will be this evening at 7 o'clock over Zoom. You can check out the SLCArtsCouncil.org website for more information for that Fiber Arts Exhibit this evening.
So coming up on Saturday night at 7 o'clock, Piano by Nature has a special piano treat. Carolyn Enger will present an online concert called Resonating Earth, which will be her personal program that will combine some of her favorite piano music with also visuals. So this is an online pre-recorded concert that you can watch on the pianobynature.org website. And then she will join you for a conversation after the concert for a live post-concert conversation. So that's coming up Saturday night, 7 o'clock. Check out the website, pianobynature.org.
That sounds lovely. Mm. That sounds lovely. Well, Morning Edition is coming up in just a minute. After that, stick around for the Marketplace Morning Report at 8:51. The Supreme Court hears oral arguments today in a case that will decide the fate of the Affordable Care Act. We'll hear more on that, plus get all the morning's business news at 8:51. And don't forget, COVID cases are increasing in our community. That was the top story today, is that St. Lawrence County has issued a state of emergency. Also, schools in Franklin County are going remote into January. So stay vigilant, wear a mask, and social distance. It's 8:34.